Hi, welcome to Visual Studio Toolbox. I'm your host, Robert Green, and joining me today is Brian Randall. Hey, Brian.
Hey, Robert. Good to see you.
Brian is an ALM MVP, a speaker at many, many conferences, Pluralsight author.
Yes, upcoming.
And is in town for the VS Live conference, which fortuitously is on the Microsoft campus.
Yep.
And which is only a short walk away from where we are right now.
Yes, and it's beautiful sunny here, so it's been a nice day.
Brian is here today to talk to us about DevOps. There's been a lot of talk about DevOps, obviously. We've had entire sessions on it at TechEd and Build. We've had videos on it on Channel 9. A lot of people talking about it. But what I wanted to focus on was what it means for the developers.
Okay.
Because I think if you're not certainly not doing it and you're reading about it, it may sound kind of like it's an IT thing. So let's put the dev in DevOps, if you will.
Okay. Well, I think, definitely there's an IT thing because we think at the holistic organizational level, right? The first thing to understand, right, you're not going to go buy DevOps off the shelf. You don't do DevOps, although you hear that, right? There's a whole people and process thing. And, sometimes you might even feel like you need a psychologist for this.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, once an organization has bought into the core concepts, which means increased communication, a more responsive process, and breaking down barriers. That's probably the big thing. And with DevOps, there are two core levels that people implement. One is they start with a V team, a virtual team, where they bring some devs over, and they bring some IT guys together. And so you guys are going to work together and start building this. And that's a good way to start, kind of define that new culture. And then once it permeates down, does it mean you change the way you work? It does. It really means the day-to-day things will change. And just like anything else, when I do ALM consulting, we don't try and do everything at once because that's a recipe for disaster.
Right.
So what you want to do is think about, okay, what are going to be our big goals of the organization, right? Set those out. How does this relate to DevOps and the core concepts? And then how do we improve our process with tools and the people? Okay. And so, I mentioned communication is a big theme. So when I think of some themes for that directly affect a developer, you get these from some smart thinkers. People have been doing this in the industry for a while. And in fact, it came out of more of the startup, small organizations, not necessarily enterprises. And Flickr gets a lot of credit. A couple guys from Flickr did a great talk at a conference back, I think it was 2009. You can find it on the net. It's easy to find. Just search Flickr DevOps. And it's worth a watch and worth a read. But to summarize one of their sections, they talked about some important things. And first is automation, shared repositories, one-step build, test, and deploy, feature flags, shared metrics and communication. So when I think about that, how does that change my day?
So let's back up one step and let's explore this from where we're at, right? So we need a mindset. We need to start working together because something's not the way we want it. We're inefficient in how we build software today. It's not an indictment. It's not saying, oh, the devs are writing crappy code. It's not that the IT guys don't know how to release things. It's, operations is doing a lousy job. We're saying that if you adopt a different way of producing software, you can get better at it, essentially. What's wrong with the way we're doing it now?
Well, okay, let's think about traditional.
What problem is this trying to address?
Well, there's lots. That's the thing. It's not just one problem.
Which problems?
Well, number one, we have often siloed implementations and organizations. You have the developers, and then you have IT, the operations folks, the people who control the network from our perspective, right? And they have thoughts about us, right? And so it starts with why does that exist? What happens there? Well, because there's this view that, developers, we build stuff to help the business, and the IT folks feel, our job is to make sure things are running so the business can do things.
Mm-hmm.
And we're always pointing fingers at one of those guys is screwing us up. They won't, IT won't let us run the latest version of Windows or the latest version of the database we want. Or we can't do this. I can't touch production servers. Well, God, every time you guys release new code, it breaks something. I don't trust you.
It worked on my machine, and then you put it in production, and it broke.
Exactly.
Or this is not what we wanted. You wrote the wrong thing, or you wrote it wrong.
Right. The other thing is no one likes being yelled at, right? So when something doesn't work in an application, right?
And yet we all continue to get married.
Yes. There's an indictment. Marriage Counseling 101 will be our next episode of the Toolbox. But for now, we'll stick to code. So when people start thinking about these things, is number one is, okay, we're going to break down the silos and increase communication. Now we got to think about, how can we work better together, right? Mm-hmm. Well, what are some of the things that inhibit us? Well, one is we often develop in isolation and then throw it over the wall. It's that handoff. And we go back to that phone call. When someone calls because the app's not working, who takes the brunt of it? Well, the IT guys often are responsible for a help desk or some kind of mechanism. And so one of the goals we're trying to do is find problems sooner.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and that comes down to one of the things, this notion of shared metrics. When we think about what's going on is, would it be great if the application or some system knew that something was wrong with the application and notified either you playing the IT role or me, the developer, or both of us?
Right.
Wouldn't it be great if the data was in a format that made sense in my tools as a developer, maybe help me debug the problem, and for you as the ops guy would let you know that, yes, this is a software problem. It's not a failure in my disk array.
Mm-hmm.
So it's about rethinking how we communicate at a root, and then, well, what goes on that communication? Well, how do we get an app out there? Well, think about how many times when you sat out to get your app into production, and the IT folks said, well, what do you guys need? So you had to sit there and write up what operating system you needed, what software you needed, and then the dreaded deployment doc, right?
Right.
You know, you wrote up all the steps. And the problem is you get to the IT, probably the person goes through it, and then he screws up something, and it doesn't work. Well, whose fault is it? Your instructions were crappy.
Right.
Right? Well, why can't you just? So we start looking at those themes. Where are we continuing to have those repeatable problems that we're not resolving? Well, it often is we're not finding problems soon enough. We're not able to make it easy to put a new release out there. There's a big delay between when we build it versus production because they want it to be tested more. They don't trust it, right? Because if it brings down the network, it's their fault, mm-hmm. right? So there's all those things that go together to create this dissatisfaction in how we build and release software. And the problem is fundamentally the business is demanding a more responsive, a more, dare I say, agile approach.
Absolutely.
To how we do it. And what we've seen is...
And that's driving much of this. You would want to get better at building software even if you were in the typical 18-month, 3-year release cycle, but that's becoming less and less common. We are now in continuous, either continuous or quite often releases. Visual Studio is updating all the time. Azure is updating extremely rapidly.
Well, so Jason said today that Azure, there's teams on Azure that release weekly. They do,
right.
I mean, crazy town.
Yeah, so we're finding, certainly if you're doing a commercial product, an app in the store or something, or, you know, website running your business, you need to be much more agile and you need to be releasing on a much faster cycle. So you don't have time to spend months designing it, months coding it, testing it, and then releasing it. It's all happening much more quickly and almost continuously. So if that's the case, then, you know, that basically begs the question of how is it that we all work together in order to make that possible? You can't have the devs switching to that model if IT's not, or ops is not willing to do it, and vice versa.
Right, and exactly. That goes back to that fundamental people and process thing. You said a magic word, the C word, continuous. Mm-hmm. You know, we're focused on this continuous improvement path, which requires overall changes. So there's this overall arch that is DevOps in an organization, and there's going to be these smaller arches that you can implement. You know, so you talk about how does it affect the developer and thinking about this. Well, let's go back to that deployment process, right? Let's just think about the simple step, which is I wrote a deployment doc.
Yeah.
Well, how did I get to that point? Well, what I did was I set up my workstation, right? And I did some work, and then I wrote some code, and then I realized, oh, I need a database. So depending upon my experience and my mindset, I might fire up SQL Server Management Studio. I might do it inside Visual Studio, but I might go through the GUI to create it. And that's fine sometimes when you're learning how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is, how do you translate that to someone else? Ah, well, then we get the idea, well, maybe I can create a script. Oh, automation, right? So we start rethinking things that we did manual. Anytime we start doing it, find a way to automate that.
Okay.
Because if it's automated, it's repeatable, right? And there's nothing people love more than knowing that if I run this, it'll just work.
Right.
So now you go from this doc to 14,000 steps to maybe run these scripts, and then maybe later just run this larger script. And what we're seeing is that we have a whole set of initiatives both inside Microsoft and outside Microsoft in the industry of how to do that. Things you're going to hear as a developer, which you may or may not spend some time with, are things like DSC, desired state configuration, which is built on top of PowerShell.
Mm-hmm.
Or there's things like Chef and Puppet, okay? And the point there, it's about orchestrating how we get environments set up, okay? So it's one thing for you to set up your workstation once the way you want it. Great, and you do that every year. Great, no big deal. But if you think about what do I need on a server to run my workload,
mm-hmm.
and then you start thinking about cloud scale, you start thinking about internet scale, those type of things, you need scripts. You got to automate. So that's that first mindset. As a developer, when you start doing things, particularly when it's something outside your code, something that your code needs to run, how are you going to automate that?
So is that the, again, is that the developer's job or is that the IT side's job to set up machines and set up servers?
It's not so much a job as to who, we're not necessarily trying to force it down one particular person's throat. What we're trying to do is be aware of what data do I need to provide. Now, in some organizations, the IT team is going to take a lead there. Mm-hmm. And so what you'll do is say, these are the things I need, and you might just give them the heads up, and they can go and forth and find. For example, DSC has these things called resources you can define that know how, for example, to configure SQL Server. Mm-hmm. So you provide a certain amount of input. So you tell them what you need. I need a database that is going to support up to 100 gigs. I need this. You tell them whatever you need, and they can go forth and automate it. So maybe it's their responsibility there. But you need to think in advance to give it to them so they can automate it, not, oh, here's that document after the fact, or the day before they're supposed to release. So it's a mindset of you want to be thinking automation as much as possible. Now, the problem is, it's one thing when you have dev and IT teams. The reason DevOps even came about was these startups that had to do both.
Right.
So it really depends on your organization. I've gone into big and large companies that have formal organizations, and then within those smaller orgs, they kind of operate these smaller startup-style teams. Mm-hmm. So it's always, it depends. Okay. But yes, given that choice, that part, configuring servers, I would, in general, as a dev, prefer my IT folks did most of it, but I want to have that conversation to say, hey, if I give you the DSC parameters, would that help you? Or, you know, right. If you're using Chef, would that help?
Okay.
So that's probably the first step. The next thing is this notion of, and this is where, well, it turns out you might want to learn a little of this automation stuff, is related to shared repositories. If we start thinking about configuration as code, right, that's a theme we're hearing also, which is getting the IT pros to think like developers, which is build something that can be used to automate. Mm-hmm. Okay, because, you know, as much as we're guilty of just doing it through the UI, there's a lot of IT pros that are that guilty too. They RDP into a server. They manually configure. Once again, you have a couple servers, no big deal. You start cracking hundreds and thousands, you can't do it. So you do things like remote PowerShell. You do these other tools. So the idea is that we're finding more and more places, even in the dev framework, where we can automate with scripts. Okay, PowerShell being it. Team build in Team Foundation server, as well as Visual Studio Online, supports running PowerShell scripts. Mm-hmm. Release management supports running PowerShell scripts. So it's ways that, you know, we might not be the only ones who understand what we need for our app to run, right? It's not, you know, the servers there are great. I need to tweak some directories. I need to do some things.
Okay.
And while I could sit down and write a C#, a VB.NET program to do it, some of those things that are at the operating system level are very easily done with scripts. We used to do VB script, now PowerShell. So learning a little PowerShell is great. Now,
okay.
If you put it in a repository, whether it's Team Foundation Server Version Control or even Git, you can share those scripts between you and the IT pros, and you can help each other. So that's that next step. And that's, once again, subtle rethinking how you work. Because what you'll find is a lot of devs, yeah, they have some scripts in their temp folder and their My Documents folder.
Right.
Sharing is caring. And then there's this next step, which a lot of developers are already doing. This one's obvious. We should be using some kind of centralized build.
Yep.
Team build, team setting, I don't care. Use something. Well, the next step is if you're doing the build, throw a few tests in there, unit tests. Okay? And now the next step is, if I can get those tests to basically make a good call that the code looks pretty good, I can deploy. Now, the initial step might just deploy to my dev server, but maybe a little further to test, and then all the way up to even prod, right? That's a very mature progression.
Right.
And this is where you really got to start talking to IT. This is the problem. Very few developers are going to be able to kick off a build and have it talk to production.
Right.
So you work out, what does a build pipeline look like? And that's why we're seeing formalized products around this. You can do this mm-hmm. for years. People have done it from you name a build product. But what we're seeing is things like Microsoft have a release manager, and there's other products out there that do it as a formalized process and provide things like sign-off, check-off between environments. A dev can sign up to this far, mm-hmm. and then someone who manages production signs off there. Sometimes that's done for legal reasons, other times it's just the way things are broken up. And that's a critical, and that's that transition stage where I'm doing stuff I should do anyways as a dev. Right. But all of a sudden now it's going to have this longer term benefit if I work with IT.
Yeah, and it also gives the IT guys this, the opportunity to get a better sense of how you're testing things. They don't necessarily want to just take your word for it. Oh yeah, it works. It's been perfectly tested. It's all good. Go and release it.
Right. Yeah,
it gives them insight into the testing requirements that they might want, and gives the developer an insight into the testing requirements they need. So you would presumably wind up with better tested software, because it's not just you wrote a bunch of unit tests, or your code works. That again is looking at it in the silo, right? The point of testing is to create software that can be deployed and with a reasonable idea that it works.
Exactly. And you're getting this kind of loop back to the first thing I said, automation. Well, now if I know how to get the environment the way I need it to be, and then if my tools are smart, which, hint, hint, release manager, for example, knows how to call DSC scripts, as an example, I now can run my build, which runs a bunch of unit tests, but if my tests fail, it stops.
Right.
Then, but if it passes, then I can say, take that code and get it up to a server. Well, the problem is, you don't always have tons of servers just sitting around waiting for you. Well, if you have Azure, for example, or some other cloud-based virtualization environment, or even local, I could deploy to a virtual machine. And because I have the script that I worked with IT on to where it'll work for production, the difference is I feed it developer parameters.
Right.
My dev VM as opposed to my production VMs or production servers. So that's a really good closed-loop process where you're seeing the benefit of that automation that you put effort into. And all you did was probably maybe give them data of what you wanted. Right. They may have written all the scripts for you, but now they're in a shared repository that you can then pull up and use from your stuff.
But you also could wind up in a situation where the lead developer has the ability to deploy to the development environment. Code's ready to be tested. I don't have to go call IT. I have the ability to deploy to the dev environment so that it can be fully tested, and then to put it into production, that's not me as the developer's job. That's IT's job. But now you're...
Well, it's less of a job. It's more of a process. It's more of a...
I use the word job. I really mean task. I don't mean, I don't mean in any kind of pejorative sense. It's a task, right? There have to be people whose task it is to do something.
Right. And yes, I know you weren't... It's
not a total free-for-all.
Well, exactly. But I think what we want to do is we want to make sure people are clear that what we're looking at is that flow, right? This continuous thing. And it's just, there's sometimes going to be gates. There's going to be evaluation points where we do it. And other things, as you mature, you'll trust it more. It also depends on what you're
building. It would be better to say responsibility.
Responsibility is
okay. When I say job, I mean responsibility. We could decide, I as an IT guy, you as the developer, I say it's your responsibility to make sure the stuff's fully tested and that it gets to the development server. And then it's my responsibility to make sure once we have all agreed it's ready to go into production, to move it into production.
Right.
And then it'll be my job, it should be both of our job to be monitoring if something goes wrong.
And we'll talk about that.
Yeah. And then we share the responsibility for fixing it. It's really about shared responsibility.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's probably a great two words to put there. And we think about that shared responsibility, right? That goes back to this notion of, okay, we're in this together. We're going to get it out there. And sometimes it's going to be a little effect if someone pushes it. The type of app you build will also affect it. For example, if your app that you focus on primarily is a app store application that then talks to some services, you have more control to get the services probably out there, whereas the app stores often are gated by the particular vendors, Microsoft as an example. On the other hand, when you do like using Flickr as an example, they control it. It was just their servers that they were mostly concerned with. They could do certain things. So that's the other thing we'll control. Sometimes you can push it all the way through, and it's all automated just based upon sanity checks. Other times, because there's human intervention or interaction that's required, you'll have that handoff and responsibility. So it really depends. The next thing is this notion of feature flags. And this one's really compelling for devs because it's all about you. It's about how you design and build the application so that you can make parts of your application available as they're ready. So in the old days, right? Old days, gray hair, you can see it. You'd sit down and do this design up front, and you'd work for a while, and then you'd throw it over the wall and ship it, right? And let's just say something moderately successful was it took 6 months.
Yeah.
Okay? And you'd go back to work, and then people would ask for things, and maybe you'd do an update in a month.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, that's because you went through all these processes. We're not having that time. The Azure team is developing stuff at this crazy pace and delivering stuff maybe in a week. Well, what you're looking for is two things. A, it might take me 6 weeks to build something, but I'm releasing every week. And that's because I might build the feature out in pieces. And then when I get enough of it there, I want people to use it. Well, how do I do that? And so there's various ways to do this, but at the end of the day, it comes down to this concept of being able to light up features in your application through some kind of switches mechanism, some flag mechanism. And there's a great Visual Studio article that was in MSDN Magazine a couple months ago by Bill Hayes from the Alien Rangers that gives you one example. There's other examples on the web, and whether it's a web app, a handheld app, a tablet app, whatever. It just means that you do some conditional logic to say, is this feature on for this particular user in this particular role, as an example. And Microsoft has really put this to the test by doing it with Visual Studio Online. As an MVP, I signed up for, you know, what we call dog fooding. I said, hey, give me the new features. I'll take it whenever you give it to me. And so what will happen is my account, they'll turn something on. And I'll log in and magically I have something new. And sometimes it works really well. And sometimes it's more pre-release quality. But I get to go through, try it out, and I provide feedback both directly and how I use it.
Right.
They gather that data. And we'll talk about how they might collect that data. And then that helps them adjust that. Maybe this is a good feature. Maybe it's not. And then once they get that, that's actually a form of beta testing.
Yep.
And then you can decide it goes through. Another type of feature flag is A/B testing, where you give one set of users a feature and you give another set of users a different type. And you evaluate the data, which one got used, what was the feedback, what had bugs. And the key is you're going to make these decisions based upon metrics and data, not based upon just, well, I want it, or I think it's the right thing. Because these cycles now are going to be determined more by what users use and helps deliver their results to the system and the business, not what you saw in a design spec 6 months ago.
Right.
And so feature flags goes with that next step, which is this notion of shared metrics. And there's multiple layers there. Number one, let's start with the obvious one. I want to know when something bad happens in production. And I would prefer to know before my user knows, if possible. Right? And so simple things, you know, IT pros have been doing this for years in their monitoring software. Let's take System Center, right? It can monitor how much disk space, the RAM, process utilization. Yeah, we care about all that. But then we start thinking about, well, I care about my app. Is something weird with my app?
Yeah.
And so there's different types of analytics packages out there. There's business analytics, which will help you do business decisions about maybe what to put in, which user is using the most type. You know, are most of our customers coming from this state or this country versus or this demographic? There's that type. And then there's the analytics of how my application operates. And there's lots of products out there from other people, and Microsoft is investing heavily in what's called Application Insights. And fundamentally, it means that you can instrument your code so that it can give you rich data, or you can let it just do observational data. For example, availability. Is my website running? Mm-hmm. I can use system monitoring to check my website occasionally. And sometimes it's just a, anybody there? Great, yeah. It's, you know, just a very simple ping type request. Or you can actually say, hey, run a web test. Pretend you're a user and access these five pages. And what happens is that gives you data back. And the key thing is shared data. My ops person knows it, the guys who's responsible to make sure that we're running, as well as the dev to say, that's weird. We put this new feature in, and now all of a sudden we're seeing all these bugs flow through, these errors flow through, or our response time has gone down. All sorts of things can come back. So you, with A/B testing and feature flags, you're able to do things like analyze when you put new code in to know what it did to the system.
And with this shared responsibility, with this kind of working together, when something goes wrong, it's not, oh, is that your fault or is that my fault? The fact is that the app is not performing the way we want it to. We need to go investigate. What percentage of this is due to network factors? What percentage of it is due to coding issues, right? And then you go fix it. It's not the blame game. It's not the, it worked on my machine. Oh, this is working until you change this feature. Finger pointing.
That is a huge thing. And that's that final thing when I talk about communications, because there's mechanics as well as mentality, which is if you're truly doing DevOps, it's shared. We don't point fingers. Right. We don't blame. And we even have to change the culture to have a willingness to fail, as long as we're willing to fix the problem, learn from it, and then improve, right? It's as long as you're willing to continue and make sure. That's the thing. And that's why, when you think about it, we don't want to have this notion of dev and IT. We want to have DevOps. We want holistic teams that are not separated by managers, not separated by buildings, but working as much as possible together for the greater good of the business, which is to deliver those solutions they need.
Right.
And so we think about communication, You know, shared metrics, having shared dashboards is an example. For Visual Studio users, we have things like Team Rooms. There's Link. There's all these things we can use. It's just agreeing upon how we're going to do it. And that's a key thing. You know, devs often would do stuff, and, you know, how many devs have set up a server in their own office under their desk because they couldn't get one out of IT?
Right.
Right. We don't want to be doing it. We don't want to hide things. We don't want to be sneaky. And on the other side, IT's got to be willing to listen and understand we're not trying to bring down the system. We're trying to make it better. And when you have that shared responsibility and that shared understanding that you guys are looking out for each other and you're one team, then you really start building that culture that's needed mm-hmm. to really make it successful. Because, like I said, Microsoft would love to do it because it would be great for any business to be able to say, hey, go buy our DevOps product. It'll right. make your things great. It's not going to happen, right? It's all those things together.
So if you're going to get started doing this, does it require an intervention, a third party? Is it, some coach comes down and gathers everybody into a room for, bitching, followed by a group hug, followed by, kumbaya. in practice, how would you get started doing this?
Well, you got to know your organization. Mm-hmm. Whoever's watching this, if you're just an average dev, you're probably not going to have the cultural authority or the real authority to make that change.
Right.
There's things you can do on your own, though. Let's just talk about what you can do without anything else, and then we'll talk about the bigger picture. At a minimum, start thinking about how you do your job. Okay? Number one, automation. Anytime you start doing it, start taking notes. This is what I had to do. Mm-hmm. If you use real paper, fine. Post-it notes, fine. But maybe use OneNote. Use Evernote. Use whatever makes you happy so that you have a digital copy that can easily be shared. Heck, put it in Notepad and check it into version control. Mm-hmm. Fine. Document those extra steps that make something work. Get it working beyond your machine. Right there, that will show a step forward. Next step is when it comes to that next time to deploy, reach out to IT. Say, I'd like to help. I'd like to understand better. How can I make your job easier? Reach out. Be the bigger person.
Right.
Recognize their job is hard. Nothing makes people feel better than empathy. And for some humans, that sometimes is difficult. There's actually scientific proof that some people don't have a lot of it. But if you can just muster a little empathy for the IT pro who has to be on call on the weekend, mm-hmm. right, that's another step. So right there, those two things are things you can do in the small. Yes, from a large organizational perspective, you need top-down buy-in. So sometimes it requires the consultant to come in, right? It requires the coach. I've sat in the room with people that hate each other. They yell at each other. It's
right.
That is a recipe for disaster. And once again, you cannot spend enough money on software to fix that if there's no cultural buy-in. So it's going to require people to think about it. But you can't start a religious movement around DevOps in your organization by your behavior. So as a dev, better communication with your own team and better communication with IT is mm-hmm. how I would start. Reach out, recognize, empathize, and then find ways to share.
Okay. What if you're an individual developer? You're a one-man shop. Are you already doing DevOps?
Yeah, I mean,
how do you?
Well, some of the things is start thinking about automation. Automation right. is your friend.
Okay.
If you're the one person, learn PowerShell if you're on Windows. Mm-hmm. No question about it. That's probably the best tip. If you're a developer doing Windows, you got to learn PowerShell. If you're a developer and you want to do apps that users tend to want these days, this little thing called JavaScript on the web's become pretty popular, right? Or things I tell right. people. If you're especially one person. But yeah, if you're a one-man shop, you are doing both of it. But there's things you can do even as a one person. Analytics, right? Whether it be App Insights or any of the other ones out there, most of them can be set up easily. They're cheap for small apps. So if you're a startup, you can have analytics to answer those questions. Because then when you hire that first person, you get someone else to join your team, you have all this data to share with them.
Right.
Build, test, and deploy. Absolutely. If I go and set up a website, say on Visual Studio Online with Windows Azure Websites, I can have it set up where I can check in. It kicks off a build, runs some unit tests, and if it's good, deploys automatically.
Right.
So you can do all these DevOps things even as a one-person team.
If you're doing cross-platform apps, whether it's with Xamarin or the Cordova tooling, do things change?
The only thing that changes is when stores get involved, right? There's some fundamental things about the getting things deployment, but overall, no. All this stuff still applies. The tools might be a little different. There might be some extra intermediary steps. For example, if you're doing iOS for Xamarin, it's not particularly easy to get OS X into a VM. You can't just shove that up into any of the hosters right now. You require specialized services. But that doesn't eliminate that you can automate it. The iOS tools have stuff for automating builds. Visual Studio Online has tools for integrating with Java, Maven. So, no, Crossplat does not change this. Okay. In fact, a lot of the great stuff came out of some of those worlds. Like, you know, Flickr did some stuff on Linux and stuff. So we have a great community. DSC now works with Linux. No, it doesn't change at all.
So in terms of, you mentioned an interesting point, deployment to stores. Mm-hmm. Is that automatable, or is that still more of a manual process? When you release updates, they're going into a store, is the process change?
Well, it's the way I understand it, once again, I'm going from a small person. I don't work for any large store company. I don't have an app in the store that is sold, run by millions of people. So I don't know if any of the vendors, Microsoft included, do work with the larger people, like the Facebooks of the world, to make it easier for them to deploy, right? Most of the stores have a process where you get your package ready, you upload, you go to a web page, fill in some stuff. Okay. So far, I haven't found any of those open to the average single developer signing his startup that lets me automate that completely. However, let's just stick to what I know very well, which is if we look at Windows and say the Xamarin stuff, I can definitely automate everything out to the build process. I can even do enterprise testing or private testing. Windows Phone supports beta tests and stuff. But there is a manual step where I have to get into the store. I have to submit it through their process. And then they have review processes before they let it go, depending upon if it's a pre-release or a final release. This is an area that's maturing. All the vendors are doing work in this space. But yes, once again, for the small shop, at least what I know, there's a place where I have to do things manually. Like I said, the Facebooks of the world, the very big vendors, Microsoft for its apps might have a process where they can do end-to-end automated because you guys you own the store, for example, for your apps. On the other hand, heck, I don't know. How do you guys – it'd be interesting to see how the Office team gets the iOS apps into the Apple store. Does someone sit there and actually submit it, or do they have – because they call it up – I guess it's Satya now, right? So Satya go and call up Tim Cook and say, hey, Tim, we got some apps. Can we work this out?
I doubt that's required, but I don't know how much of it's automated.
Well, exactly, right? In other words, I don't know what they do for the big players, but for the average small player, I know they're every store I've done, tried, it's all. There's a manual step that I can't automate.
Right. Okay. So any last thoughts, words, advice?
It's a journey.
Get started by small steps.
Definitely do baby steps. If you're the one leading it and you're just a developer, which is great. Love being a developer. I love writing code. Try those baby steps.
Okay.
If you're a manager, start talking to your team first and then reach out to your peers and then go up. If for some crazy reason you're a CEO of some large Fortune 500 company, yes, you can hire me. I'll come in and help you do it. No, but in all due seriousness, my point is, depending upon your level in the organization, small or large, talk to your people first, get everybody's buy-in, and then do those baby steps. And the big thing is that psychology. Remove blame, shared responsibility, shared success. Your win is my win, and have empathy for each other.
And it is... at the end of the day, it is about process. It's about improved process.
Absolutely.
We're making software. We all have the same goal, which is to create and distribute software that does something that helps the business.
Yes.
So it is really about improving the process to do a better job of doing what we're all there in the first place for.
Exactly. Yep.
Cool. All right.
Thanks for having me, Robert. It's great to see you
again. Thanks for coming on. Hope you enjoyed that, and we'll see you next time on Visual Studio Toolbox.